Well, whether it's high gas prices or a sense of responsibility to the environment, you see more and more hybrids on the road. As a matter of fact, my wife and I have one. It's Earth Day. Our guest, both guests know a lot about hybrids and other green car technologies. John Dolan has some tips on choosing and driving your hybrid. Glenn Bauer from the UW can fill us in on what's on the horizon for hybrid technology and obviously also what's currently here. He has MS and PhD in mechanical engineering from UW-Madison, Glenn has. And in addition to his role as advisor for the College of Engineering's competitive automotive teams, he also teaches and does research. You're a busy guy.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks a lot, Glenn, for coming by today. I really appreciate it. And John Dolan, known as Mr. Hybrid, they call you over there at the Smart Motor.
I guess that's the terminology. Yeah.
Hybrid specialist. He's been working with hybrids and the new plug-in hybrids for
Oh, since they came out in 2000.
Yeah, so a long time.
Right.
Well, great to have both of you here. Appreciate it very much. You may have some questions about your hybrid, or maybe you haven't gotten one yet and you're interested possibly in it, getting one. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Glenn, what exactly is the science behind hybrid vehicles?
Well, the first one that we're trying to do is every time we stop a vehicle, we're basically taking the kinetic energy we have, the motion we have, mm-hmm. and we just, using the brakes on the vehicle, we just create heat. And heat isn't a very useful form of energy. So with a hybrid, we put an electric motor on the vehicle, and instead of using the mechanical brakes and making heat, we basically use the motor as the brake, and we create electricity, and then we have a battery on board then that stores that electricity, and then when we accelerate, we reuse this energy we just stored.
Yeah, very good. So that's how it works. That's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, so most of the hybrids get the biggest benefit in, you know, stoplight-type traffic or stop signs. That's where you see your biggest efficiency gains.
Yeah, we do. I was trying to think, Renee's car, we have a Toyota, the Prius, and that she gets about 50 miles to the gallon on that in the summer. She doesn't do as well in the wintertime. I will have to, and I'm not sure why that would be the case. Maybe it's just how she drives.
No,
it's not. We can tell you all the thermal issues involved. It's called the heater most of the time.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it just in the wintertime, they have to run the engine longer to get it to temperature.
Oh.
And so it just basically you're heating your engine block up. And so that takes the energy, or it takes the efficiency out of the fuel economy.
Yeah, it knocks it back 10 miles a gallon anyway. Yeah. I mean, it's more like 40 than it is 50. Sure.
There's other factors, too. There's more benzene in the fuel in the wintertime as an anti-icer, and a lot more resistance in cold weather than there is in warm weather.
So are there some new technology? I mean, the technology's changing all the time. Are you guys working on anything over UW?
We're always working on things. Whether we're making progress is the question. So, well, we're currently working coupled with the engine research centers. They do advanced combustion work, and so they have a new technology where they actually inject two different fuels. And so you use a regular diesel engine. You port inject like gasoline or ethanol in the intake runner, and then use a small amount of diesel fuel through the normal diesel fuel injector to control the ignition. So you're using maybe 70 to 85% of gasoline or ethanol, and then like 15% diesel fuel. And what they're doing then is instead of having a flame front, everything that you put in the intake system reaches self-ignition temperature at exactly the same time or very close. And so instead of having these flame fronts where we have really high temperature gradients across it, we basically have all these nucleus of sites that ignite at the same time. And it turns out it's more efficient and it's a much cleaner burn as far as nitric oxide, which is one of the nitric oxides and hydrocarbons in sunlight are what create smog. And so if you can reduce that, it's great.
Oh, well, that sounds pretty cool. What do you think, John?
Well, there's a lot of engineering going on to make the gasoline engine, the internal combustion engine by itself, more fuel efficient. Substituting spark plugs for lasers is another thing that's on the horizon, and combining port and direct injection to make the engines more efficient, changing the cycle of the engine. A lot of that's been going on. Turbocharging small engines doesn't seem to offer much of a benefit, but a lot of that is going on among car makers as well. Take a smaller three-cylinder or four-cylinder engine, turbocharge it to give it more air and more fuel to make up. But the fuel savings are minimal with that.
Yeah. John Dolan, Mr. Hybrid from Smart Motors, hybrid specialist at Smart Motors, and Glenn Bauer from the University of Wisconsin-Madison College of Engineering, talking with them about hybrids today. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Steele in Appleton, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, gentlemen. Yeah, I was curious about the hybrids that collect energy when you brake. I have a 98 Ford Escort, and if I see a red light, I take my foot off the gas, and I try to play the game of getting there before it turns green. So that type of hybrid wouldn't be very good for me, would it?
Certainly would. That's the game we all play when we drive a hybrid.
Pulse and glide, man.
Yeah, basically, you drive your car like you ride your bike. When you see the light ahead of you about to change, you don't pedal like hell to try to beat it. You try to save your energy, you coast, and then you anticipate. And if anybody drove a regular gas car the same way that most of our hybrid folks drive the hybrids, they would also realize fuel economy savings in just a regular everyday car, in fact. Huh? Driving style is the biggest thing. In fact, I think it was the Oak Ridge Lab did a study, and they found that any time Americans drive over 80 miles an hour, they're losing about 24% of their fuel economy. And if you ever drive on our interstate systems, most people seem to be driving about 80 miles an hour out there.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Steele, for calling. Mm-hmm. We had a Facebook comment from Karen, who said, I saved my gas receipts and mileage figures since I bought my 2008 Prius. Over the last 5 years, I've saved over $4,000 when I compare it against my previous car, which was a RAV4. So are we getting to the point where we're getting payback on our hybrids? What do you think, Glenn? I'll ask you first.
I think with the Toyotas, probably you can.
Yeah.
The other manufacturers just haven't got the mass production. They don't have the numbers. Yeah. And Toyota basically invested a lot of money 15 years ago. They decided they were going to be the leaders in hybrids. And so they've pushed it, and they have enough very similar powertrains and components and enough vehicles that they can build a hybrid cost effectively, where all the other manufacturers have maybe one or two models and their volumes aren't very high. And so you see a bigger differential from like the Fords or the VWs and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
You're kind of getting to the point where if you look at it, typically with the price of fuel in the United States, if you keep the car more than probably 6 or 7 years, you'll start saving money.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take you, depending on how many miles you drive a year, 5 to 6 years to break even with the additional cost of it. So if you're a person that doesn't like to buy a new car and keep it till, you know, if you want to trade off every 3 years, then hybrids probably, you know, from a money standpoint, aren't going to be a good investment.
Unless you lease them.
Yeah.
Leasing is a pretty popular way to absorb some of that depreciation, which you don't really realize because you get a new car every 3 years, and you're pretty much paying for the part of the car that you use, really, not the depreciation. Mm-hmm. An example of what Glenn's referring to is our newest hybrid in the Toyota's lineup, the Avalon, which is our flagship car. It's probably the most Lexus-like of all of our cars. It's slotted ahead of the Camry.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of the offset between the gas-only Avalon and the hybrid Avalon is only $1,700, which is the lowest it's ever been. And that's something that's easily achievable to realize return on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's just an economy of scale. They've made so many of the hybrids over the decades. Toyota just announced they sold their 5 millionth hybrid last month. So that's how you get there.
That's how you do it. Yep. Pat in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a couple comments, I guess, I wanted to make. When the Model T was around, I mean, they're still around, but when they're making them, I heard they would get 28 miles to the gallon and go 65 miles an hour. Here we are over 100 years later, and basically the American engineer, we're getting less than 28 miles to the gallon average, and 65 miles an hour is fast enough. It seems almost an embarrassment that it's taken the Japanese manufacturers, you know, to push the envelope of making a cleaner, better world. Americans' cars are much better now since the impetus of the competition between the Japanese technology and American technology. I'm wondering if they hope that America will take the reins and maybe, you know, show what we can really do.
Well, actually, we are. For the first time in, I think, recent history, the fuel economy has gone up to where all the U.S. manufacturers are up. I think it's the average fuel economy now is 24.1 miles per gallon, which doesn't seem like a whole lot, but considering where we came from, it's a huge improvement. So American cars, and you'll see with the introduction of these new 2015 CAFE corporate average fuel economy emissions or fuel economy regulations, more and more American manufacturers, as we can see by the release of newer hybrids and PHEVs and electric cars, are required to up their ante a little bit.
Yeah. Glenn?
And well, as far as the engine technology, cars in the 20s and 30s had no emissions control, and you didn't have air conditioners, you didn't have radios. Basically, the engine, its purpose was to propel you, and that was it. You didn't carry a lot of extra weight for comfortable seats and stuff like that. So it's a hard comparison. And the other one is just the catalyst system and the emissions that you also have to do. So
yeah, that all up.
That all takes away from the fuel economy we could get if we weren't concerned about the environment we live in.
And plus safety. I mean, there's so many safety features that have been added to the cars in the last 10 years. Cars are much safer than they ever have been, but that safety and these fuel economy measures, they all increase the price of the vehicle and add a little weight to the car as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Added weight is less fuel economy.
That's right.
So if you put all that on one of those Model Ts, the gas mileage wouldn't be so good.
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't be able to. Probably the power.
Well, when he was talking about the Model T, it kind of brings to mind that originally there were some hybrids around back then, even in 1898 or so.
Yeah.
What's his name? Ferdinand Porsche and his business associate, Pike, whatever his name was. They put together because the internal combustions were so pathetically underpowered and weak.
Yeah.
So they attached an electric motor to it just to improve it.
Just to improve it.
Yeah.
Well, Glenn Bauer and John Dolner are going to be with us right up until 12:30 today as we talk with them about hybrid vehicles. You stay with us. News coming up next here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On this Earth Day, we're taking a look at hybrid technology. Larry Mueller here, my guests. Glenn Bauer in mechanical engineering from UW-Madison. He's the advisor for the UW College of Engineering's competitive automotive teams, also teaches and does research as well, and certainly knows his stuff when it comes to hybrids and a lot of other things as well. John Dolan, Mr. Hybrid with Smart Motors, he's been working with hybrids and now the plug-in hybrids for more than a decade for sure, and always great to have him come by as well. You can join in, you can go to Facebook, my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org or phone at 1-800-642-1234. Scott in McGregor, Iowa phone, so let's go there. Scott, hi, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I just had a question about seven-passenger vehicles. My wife and I have been looking at buying a minivan, maybe a used one. And when I was looking around the minivans, I was doing some shopping, and I see that in Europe, Dodge or Chrysler makes a Grand Voyager minivan with a 2.8-liter diesel motor. Looks like it's getting around 42 miles to the gallon. And I kind of tried to do some research on how to import one. Didn't have any luck whatsoever.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering when we can expect to see that kind of technology in the United States, if it's a pollution issue or if it's just a matter of getting them to the market in the United States, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Scott. And Glenn Bauer, let's turn to you for that first.
We just did this because we were shopping for a car, too. If you take the price difference between gasoline and diesel fuel right now, by the time you get the more efficient diesel engine, it turns out the fuel costs are almost the same today because there's about a 25% premium on the diesels. The trouble that you have with the diesels is there's the cost of the after-treatment system. So the trucks are doing it with what they call diesel exhaust fluid or urea, and that's the only way that they can get their nitric oxide numbers down in the exhaust system. So a normal car doesn't have any excess oxygen in the exhaust stream where a diesel does, and so you have to have a different technology for reducing the pollutants coming out of the engine. And so there's some challenges with that, and in Europe, they have dual standards, and in the United States, there's one set of standards. And so the standards are set up basically for gasoline engines, and if you do a lot of work, you can make a diesel engine then meet those standards.
Okay.
And another thing, when comparing European test cycle numbers for fuel economy to American test cycle numbers, theirs are, believe it or not, even more generous than ours, and their numbers always look a lot higher than they are in the real world, especially if he were to get that car over here, his fuel economy wouldn't be anything like that, because their test cycles are a lot more lenient than ours.
I'd say probably mid, the higher 30s is what I'd probably
more like it.
Get with that. But and it's just the cost. It's just the... The diesel engine, basically we talked about this, a gas hybrid is about the same cost as a diesel engine, and you get about the same price. So in the United States, they've gone with the gasoline hybrids in lieu of developing a lot of diesels.
For automakers, it's always a question of cost versus benefit in anything they do, and that is just too exotic of a technology to combine those two.
We have, it's caller from Superior. Bauer? Is that correct?
Laura?
Laura?
Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've had a Camry hybrid since they came out, 2008, and I've been pretty happy with it, but I'd like to have something that gets a little better mileage, and I'm looking at the Prius V. And I was wondering what you thought of that car.
All right. John, you want to start?
Yeah, I thought you would mention that because that's the next step from a Camry if you want a little bit more room. And it is quite a bit more room than the regular Prius. And if you look at cargo space because it's a hatchback, you'll find that it's kind of close to our RAV4's cargo space in the back. But believe it or not, the fuel economy between the Gen 2 Camry hybrid and the Prius V are about the same. They're both around 42 miles per gallon. So there is a newer Camry now. So if you like the Camry's been redesigned. The hybrid system's lighter, more compact, and more fuel efficient. So its fuel economy is, like I said, right at 41, 42, just like the Prius V. They're identical.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
All right. There
Great.
You go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. Tom in Fond du Lac, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I've been driving a Prius for about 6 years now. And a common question I get from my friends and other people who are interested in Prius is, what is the battery life?
Right. That is a, I probably have spent most of my career in the car business doing myth-busting about battery life. And I'm sure Glenn is pretty familiar with that, too.
Yeah.
I'll let Glenn handle that.
Well, battery life is a difficult thing to say. So, typically, we just rate them as to how many times we can charge and discharge the battery. And things that typically would shorten those are extreme cold and extreme hot. So if you basically live in the Midwest, you have kind of the best balance between the two. So if you, for instance, have a garage that you keep your hybrid in, it's going to be better for the life of your battery because it's not going to get as cold in the wintertime. And then it's not going to bake and get as hot in the summertime. And so... temperature extremes are really the thing that kind of chisel away the longevity of that battery. If you can use it in normal temperature conditions, I'm pretty sure you should be getting like I would say 150,000 miles or 10 years out of that battery.
Other things that decrease the battery life are deep discharges, where the battery goes into like drain mode. And all of most hybrids, and in fact all batteries, have their own temperature sensors and ECUs and things that prevent that from happening. And the great thing about charge-sustaining hybrids like the Prius, because it uses the nickel metal hydride batteries, those batteries are always probably being monitored by an ECU at all times. It never gets out of a charge range of like 40 to 65% charge. So it never gets completely discharged, never gets fully charged. So it's operating in a sweet spot, which kind of lends it to a comfortable life. So you don't have those deep discharge rates, which along with heat and deep discharge rates coupled with heat are even worse, can damage your battery. And Toyota's lab tests, bench tests on the batteries are around 180,000 miles of charges and discharges, and the nickel metal hydride batteries. And Oak Ridge Labs and all the major labs, Idaho Labs, Pacific Labs, they've all tested these. The Electric Vehicle Research Institute in California has tested them as well. Come up with about the same numbers.
Yeah. Not same.
So that's all built into a controller that's in basically in with the battery that... This is the smarts, basically, of the system, and it talks to the rest of the vehicle.
Yeah.
And so the only other thing I'd say is don't store your vehicle for a year at a time without running your hybrid. That could be the other thing that could hurt the battery.
Sure.
Is it what they will lose some charge just from sitting there.
Self-discharge.
Yeah, and so that's, if you're going to let it sit for a long period of time without running it, that could be the only other.
Yep. To underscore that, the owner's manual says you should drive your hybrid every 3 months at a minimum. So if you're a snowbird and you keep a car in Arizona or Florida, have somebody drive your car every 3 months at least.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Wayne in Sparta. Hello. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I have a paper route. I deliver newspapers in a rural route.
Yep.
I have to stop at every mailbox, stop and go constantly. Would a hybrid work for that?
It'll always work, yes. No, it would be a wonderful application. The other thing you would get the benefit of a hybrid is you won't be changing your brake pads nearly as often. And I know. I'm going to say, I know the rural postal carriers spend a lot of money on brakes.
Yeah. In fact, we've sold Priuses to rural postal carriers who just love it for the application.
So that wouldn't wear the battery out prematurely.
No, not at all. The same factors still apply about battery management and stuff.
Yeah. So a battery, if you only put a small amount of charge in and take that same small amount of charge out, that is the way to get the most out of the battery. And so in the situation you're talking about, that's what the car would do. It would just save the amount you used to stop, and then it would reuse that, basically use that same amount, and then it would... Yeah.
It'd be pretty perfect.
Yes.
So the battery wouldn't, like, if I drove that car for 8 hours or 10 hours straight, I wouldn't run out of battery, stop and starting car.
No. Charge-sustaining system. Yep. It keeps charging itself through your coasting and your braking. When you coast up to that next mailbox, it's charging the battery.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Actually, that's a great application. My father-in-law was a rural mail carrier for many years, and I'm thinking he would have liked to have had one.
Especially if they have to pay their own gas.
Sam in Wausau, hello.
Hello, Larry. Wonderful show. Thank you for having it.
Sure.
My question deals with kind of social well-being and the carbon offset hasn't been discussed. I mean, your gentleman, the guest, very informed people, but they haven't mentioned the carbon offset as far as a cost added onto the vehicle that you're going to recover as you're driving that vehicle. They said you recoup the cost in about 7 years, but isn't there a cost offset to that, a carbon offset? And aren't there tax incentives still for buying a hybrid vehicle? And I'll take my answer off the air, sir.
Okay. No tax incentives that I know about.
Not on the hybrid incentives. They expired many years ago for Toyota because they had like a disappearing horizon. As soon as the manufacturer hit 60,000 vehicles in sales, they would phase out quarter by quarter, or was phased out a long time ago. And now the only tax incentives are on pure electrics, higher cost, higher capacity batteries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as far as the carbon footprint, if you're using less fuel, you are basically creating less carbon dioxide, and so that does lower your carbon footprint. And there are studies being conducted by the national labs that try to account for then the fact that we, you know, instead of a big gas engine, we have a smaller gas engine and then a battery and electrical component. So the hybrids take basically more energy to create because we have heavy metals in the batteries. And so there's ongoing studies as to over the life, you know, if you drive it for 10 or 12 years as a normal life of the vehicle, you know, what is your carbon footprint? And it's depending upon which lobbying group takes the report, you know, they put their own twist to what should be accounted and not accounted. And
in fact, we used to take a lot of heat in the early days of the Prius with the nickel metal hydride batteries. People would say that there's this giant Sudbury mine up in Ontario. There's just a lunar landscape because all the nickel from there has been going into hybrid batteries. So the fact of the matter is there's more nickel in the metal in the frame of the vehicle than there is in a hybrid battery. There really isn't that much nickel in a hybrid battery. And that Sudbury mine, most of the nickel that came out of there was to build the skyscrapers in New York and cities like that.
What's
been there for 150 years.
And now we're to the point where we're salvaging. There's enough hybrids out that there's a lot of salvaging of the hybrid batteries. And so through proper processing, we're basically, those are getting another life. And
great. Recycling.
It's sort of like aluminum. Aluminum, you only use 10% of the energy to recycle it versus it is to get it from aluminum oxide the first time. And so same with the batteries. So
that kind of answers Amanda's question. She sent emailed, she's a supporter of increased vehicles efficiency. Recently someone told her the carbon footprint of a hybrid is actually greater than that of a Hummer. Based on
that story's been around a long time.
Yeah, and wanted that debunked, which is, yeah.
If they're just talking about manufacturing, maybe they're even. But as soon as you start driving it, I guarantee it, the teeter totters going towards the Hummer.
In fact, to Toyota's credit, they've actually reduced the energy used to manufacture a car by 21% in the last 11 years per car. The actual energy that it takes. In fact, today it made a big splash. They opened up a 50 kilowatt hour solar array at their factory down in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that extra energy will go back into household energy as well. So they're doing a lot of things not using any water on their lawns and stuff like that. That's all little things, but they all combine to make a big difference, I think.
Yeah. And overall, the manufacturers have to have a certain percentage of the vehicle be recyclable. And so there actually are some standards for that, too, that it's like over 90% of the vehicle has to be easily recyclable.
The Prius even uses bioplastics in its interior components, where they'll take, bioplastics that are made from seaweed and kelp and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Frank in Port Edwards, your turn. Hi.
Good afternoon. I don't know if this question's been answered, but I'm curious about the economics of a plug-in hybrid. How many miles on your electric power input do you have to drive before you're going to break even on that?
A lot of variables there. It's how you drive, where you drive, and things like that for the break even. This is the issue that car makers are facing nowadays with the lithium batteries, besides the fact that they're pretty darn complex. They have some safety issues. But the lithium offers the best promise for deep charging and fast charging, more so than the nickel metal they're using in the hybrids, which are great for that application. But all electric cars seem to need lithium, and there's quite a few issues with that.
Correct. So, I mean, if you look at what you're going to pay for the electricity versus the gasoline, you're probably going to pay, depending upon who your supplier is and what time you charge. So if you get one of these systems where you charge at night at off rates, and people with heat pumps will do this, they get a special meter, and then at night you get an extra super deep discount. So you could get 1/4 to 1/6 the cost. If you charge during prime time, you're going to be, you know, you'll be 1/3 the cost of the same amount of gasoline to get you that same distance. So then from there, it's just a matter of how many miles you're going to drive in a year, or, you know, over a year, and then you'd have to do the math from there. So
Mm-hmm. And a plug-in hybrid, basically, if you're driving the city, can be an all-electric car, depending how you can change your lifestyle to do multiple chargings during the day. That's what I do. I have a plug-in Prius, and I charge in wherever I go. And MG&E has been forward-thinking enough to have something like 28 charging stations around town, and I do a lot of home charging. So in the city, my goal is to not use any gas whatsoever. But then if I want to drive across country, I drove to New York recently and just behave like a regular 50-mile-per-gallon Prius on the highway. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot, Frank, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Fred in Wisconsin Rapids, thank you for calling. Hi.
Sure. Hi, guys. I've been always on the fence with hybrids. I wonder how reliable are the older ones, like the 2008, 2007, and is it like a gasoline car that you avoid if they have mileage over 100,000? And lastly, if the battery goes kerplunk on them, can you just drive around with a gasoline engine, you know, for months until you get the money to replace the battery?
I would not recommend that, and I think the car goes into a limp home mode when the battery is in any kind of danger whatsoever. There'll be like a Christmas tree of warning lights telling you not to drive the car at all if there's a battery issue. So I don't think that's possible to drive like that. I wanted to just talk to your question about high mileage cars. Consumer Reports has done a lot of really thoughtful studies on Gen 1 and Gen 2 Priuses, which the Gen 2 is probably the largest number of Priuses on the road with age on them. That would be the 2004 to the 2009 Prius. They've invited owners out to their place in Connecticut to run through a whole profile of tests to study performance data in all ranges from battery capacity to fuel economy to acceleration. And they find that with the nickel metal hydride batteries, even when they get old, if they haven't failed, they're going to keep operating. And what happens is the gas engine just has to run a little bit more to do more charging for it while you're driving. Oh, that's the beauty of the nickel battery. If they fail, it's usually because of a real serious heat issue or a manufacturing defect, and it's pretty rare.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Pete in La Crosse, hello.
Hi, Larry. With the time we have left, I bought my Prius new in 2000, so it's 12 and a half years old right now with 116,000 miles on it, 116,000.
Yep.
Yes. It's been trouble-free so far, original hybrid battery. And, you know, if people learn how to drive, whether it's with a hybrid car or with a regular car, it's pretty easy to beat EPA mileage ratings. But yep, I don't think definitely. People are driving EPA kind of driving. I think
no, we're all in a hurry, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, they're doing Sports Car Club of America driving.
Right.
Yeah.
And really, the driving style is the driver is the biggest variable in that whole thing. Cars fairly dialed in, if as you probably know, just by following the speed limit, you're going to get the fuel economy stated on the sticker or better. But if you're a real hypermiler, then you will do better.
And fuel efficiency standards are going to be increasing, Glenn, over the next few years, if I'm not mistaken. What does that mean for the alternative types of engines, like those in the hybrid?
Well, with a hybrid, you can you're able to utilize some engine technologies that wouldn't be acceptable to consumers if you didn't have the hybrid package on it. So, for instance, maybe when you accelerate, there's a weak spot in the power band of the engine, and like an Atkinson cycle is what I'm thinking of, and this is what Ford does, is that they can offer you that engine in the hybrid, but they wouldn't normally because it doesn't give the drivability you want. And so you can, combining with the hybrid, then you can do some of these alternative higher mileage type engine technologies that you wouldn't be able to get away with. Because in the end, you have to sell it in the United States. We have this very unique system. The government regulates it. The automakers build it, and then they hope somebody buys it.
But then they have to warranty the car.
Yes, yes. They have to warranty also.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's exactly how it works, isn't it?
Yeah, and so everybody's mad because there's, you know, the car companies are lobbying the EPA and stuff, but I mean, I think most of the car companies today are cognizant of greenhouse gases and tailpipe emissions locally for smog and stuff, and you know, but in the end, the company's there and they have stockholders that want
Yeah.
They want something, right?
And in the end, when we're at the end, I want to thank you. Thank you guys very much for being with us today. I hope we can do it again. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having us.
And we're glad to have you listening in. Glenn Bauer with the UW College of Engineering. One of our guests, the other, John Dolan, hybrid specialist at Smart Motors in Madison. Our guests. It's great to have them along. Again, thank you so much for listening in. Jerry Apps joins me tomorrow with his latest book. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.